Yeah, I think you got to have clarity on your mission and what your end goals are. That will dictate your decision making.
Welcome to the Bitcoin Bottom Line with Stephen McClurg and CJ Wilson. Today we have a very special guest, my friend Derek Morgan, former linebacker for the Tennessee Titans.
All right, so let's just jump right into this. Stephen, you got athletes. You have all these tall people that you surround yourself with. Give me the story. How do you know Derek? Derek, how do you know Stephen? How do we get here?
Well, first of all, I'm taller than Derek, so we'll just leave it at that.
We're built a little differently, but definitely got me on the height.
Yeah, so Stephen has this theory that if he surrounds himself with super tall, super athletic people, then it's just going to be just Chad energy success constantly, you know? So he's got all these tall dudes all over the place that like he's either worked with or worked for. He's got all these athletes that he's connected with, football guys, baseball guys. Although I'm only 6'1", so I'm like, you know, on the junior side, I'm working my way up. But I think Stephen has this theory, and I do too, actually, as an athlete, that, you know, we are better team players, and you have a really good idea of how hard you have to actually work to succeed. You know, I think that's the big difference between athletes and, let's say, celebrities who sometimes have this like flashpoint of success. So Derek, why don't you tell us a little bit about your story, where you grew up, and what you're up to now, and you know, how we got into this.
Yeah, definitely. I appreciate you guys having me on. Yeah, I mean, to your point, man, it's definitely a slow burn. You know, I started playing football, about 9 years old. I grew up in Pennsylvania, and, you know, that was my passion. And really at an early age, kind of dedicated myself to the sport for a number of reasons. One, I loved it. Two, it was a way for me to really get a free education. That was big in my house coming up. My mom was very adamant about my education and had to have A's and B's to even be able to play football. And, you know, that was the priority, you know, student athlete type of mentality. And kind of going from there, ended up graduating from Coatesville High School early, enrolled at Georgia Tech in January of 2007. My whole goal was not the red shirt. I was like, I'm not trying to sit on the bench and root from the sidelines. I want to get right into the mix. Part of one of the reasons why I chose Georgia Tech, it was, you know, when you're looking at the Ohio States and the Alabama, is like, you're going to red shirt. Like, you got former NFL players in front of you. So for me, it was like, yeah, those schools are great, but Georgia Tech, not that it wasn't a juggernaut like Alabama, but they were still competitive. And so for me, it was like the best of both worlds of being able to play early, getting the quality education, being in a great city like Atlanta. And so, you know, ended up going to Georgia Tech, did 3 years and out, got drafted by the Titans, 16th overall in the 2010 draft. And so spent my entire career with the Tennessee Titans, played out two contracts, and then I retired in 2019. Latter part of my career, went back and got my MBA, and then started to do a lot of investments and more hands-on things that were in the real estate industry. Then also did some impact investing, started to align a lot of my capital with my values. And so really kind of ventured down that lane of, you know, different types of investments like affordable housing and investing in minority entrepreneurs and really social enterprise type businesses. And then the same day I retired, I launched our real estate development company called Kingdom Group. And so we essentially do a lot of the impact investment type of activities, but more in the real estate industry. And so right now we have projects all across the Southeast, ranging from affordable workforce housing to workforce development. And so we're just getting started, but you know, we're making I would like to think we're making an impact for the better. So excited to dive in more.
Yeah, one of the common themes that CJ and I've had on the show since we began is inflation and how that impacts people, really across the board, whether you're a retiree and you're trying to retire, you've got a nest egg, and now you've got to earn enough money on that to even be able to retire with the amount of inflation that we have right now. But let's also talk about affordable housing, because one of the biggest impacts on people in an inflationary environment is just the ability to live somewhere. And as we know, and have seen back in California, there's a huge homeless population in San Francisco and the LA areas, and it's spreading because housing is just no longer affordable anymore. Are you seeing that type of activity in the places that you're making investments?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sitting outside of this building right here. You might be able to see some of it, but we're doing a 50-unit transitional housing development where we're basically working with the homeless population in Nashville to get people off the streets. And so, you know, it's becoming a bigger and bigger problem, especially in markets like Nashville, Austin, obviously LA. But like, you know, it's starting to become a bigger divide between the haves and the have-nots. And, you know, yeah, everybody talks about the growth in these markets, but like, not everybody is partaking. And a lot of people are getting left out, especially in, like, I'm in North Nashville right now. And this part of town has historically been segregated, you know, redlined, a lot of, you know, prejudice acts that kind of have kept people in this part of town cut off from the rest of the city. And so I'm seeing it be more and more of an issue. The cost of living is just going through the roof. You know, I don't know what the actual median income, you know, is, or like the living wages are to make a good living here. But it's going up. I know it's not going down or staying the same. So a lot of people can't keep up with that. Wages aren't going up at the same rate as the cost of living is. And so what it's creating is a really big problem. And the need for affordable housing is becoming more and more in demand. And so, you know, we're probably at 50,000 units in terms of a deficit in the city of Nashville. And we can't keep up with the demand. So it's becoming a bigger and bigger problem.
So Derek, I think one thing that's really cool that you have as an athlete, especially, is it sounds like you've always been playing the long game, right? You worked since you were a kid working towards a career, right? You had a mindset of building yourself into this player so that you could make a difference and make an impact in your career. Now you've exited the playing game. So you and I are in the same game now, which is, what do we do next? And you've created a system and you've created an investment group where you can actually make a post-career impact. And that post-career impact is actually a long-term investment, right? Because you're doing real estate. Real estate is not a quick deal. It's a lot of infrastructure involved. It's a lot of paperwork. It's a long time. It's a lot of loans, things like that. So what has kept your eyes on the horizon the whole time so that you've been productive while not maybe trying, while not getting derailed from all the sort of temptations of the get rich quick type investments that people tend to pursue as athletes, that people are always kind of trying to get us to buy into?
Yeah, I think you got to have clarity on your mission and what your end goals are. That will dictate your decision making. That will dictate what types of projects you do versus the ones you don't do. Like you said, we get pitched a lot of opportunities. And so if you clearly have your goals, you know, distinguished and have, you know, a general sense of direction, you know, that helps cut down on wasted time, distractions that don't align with what your mission and values are. And so for me, you know, it's easier to kind of filter through the opportunity, so to speak. And so that's kind of like, as a company, you know, when we're presented with an opportunity or we're looking at an opportunity, we run it first and foremost through our values and our mission. And so if it's going to hurt the community more than it helps the community, not for us. If it doesn't have any sense of equity or inclusiveness, not for us, right? And so these just aren't just buzzwords that we subscribe to. These are like real practices that we put into place. So what I like to call it is bottom up. You know, we take a very bottom up approach to the types of projects we do. We, you know, I can't really come in from a top down standpoint and tell a community or a neighborhood what they need, right? I gotta consult with them. I gotta understand what are their priorities, what are their pain points, what do they want to see? Like, so that's the approach in which we take in every project we do. It takes longer, but it yields better results from a holistic standpoint. So that's kind of how I've kind of stayed on track. And you know, I'm not gonna say I've been perfect, right? Every once in a while we get distracted by something bright and shiny, and it's like, wow, like this could be, you know. So you try not to waste too much time on opportunities like that. But I think for the most part, you know, there was like a couple of month lull for me once I retired, because I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. I had ideas, I had seeds that I had planted throughout my playing career, but there was this gap of like maybe 4 to 6 months from the time I announced my retirement, or actually, I mean, I knew I was retired going into my last season. Like, I knew that was my last season. And so from the time of the last game, December 29th, 2018, from like that time to like mid-year 2019, there was this gap of like, you know, kind of wandering, like, okay, I could do this. I could do anything, but I can't do everything. Mm-hmm. And so it was more of like, okay, I got to narrow in what it is I'm going to do day to day, because like as an athlete, you know, like we're very regimented. So we got to have some type of system that we're following, some type of schedule we're on, or else we're just going to get, you know, we're going to be aimlessly wandering. Right. And that's how you end up in those get rich quick schemes, because there's, you don't really have no sense of direction. Right. And so, you know, it was a process. It wasn't like seamless. Right. But it was something that I took intentionality to do while still playing. So I had opportunities and options, you know, when I hung them up.
Yeah. Now, speaking of the homeless problem in Nashville, you know, with the amount of people, you mentioned 50,000 people, and obviously you're not building units to house 50,000 people. And that's a lot of people, and that's a lot of work. What are some of the ways that that Nashville is going to be able to overcome this problem? And this applies to all cities, but, you know, specific to Nashville.
My opinion is you got to find ways to utilize dormant assets. There's so many abandoned buildings and lots and land that sit around the city. Like, I did a whole search across the city of just like metro owned property. And it was, you know, it was hundreds of acres. Right. And so for me as a developer, I look at that like, wow, that's a huge missed opportunity, because we're trying to make stuff work on like half an acre lots, and the price isn't coming down anytime soon. So if I'm a city, I got to look into ways to activate the assets that are on my books that are just dormant. Right. So if I got a, you know, an old school, or if Metro Water owns 30 acres on the south side of town, like how can we turn those into legitimate ways and opportunities to prevent some, like to fight against some of these issues that we see? I think that's one solution. I think the other solution is connecting the capital with the on the ground operators. So there's usually a disconnect from institutional type capital and like the actual issues and opportunities on the ground. So like, you know, for me, I kind of like have come to view myself as an intermediary of sorts. So like, you know, I'm in North Nashville, right? A lot of these people, they're not talking to AllianceBernstein and Goldman Sachs, right? They're in different tax brackets. They have different realities. But somebody like myself who grew up in areas like this, I have connections to those types of institutions. So it takes people like myself who have an awareness and have an understanding of sorts of the issues that are in these communities, right? To be able to be an advocate, right? To connect the opportunities with the capital to really do the work. I'm not gonna say I have all the answers, but those are some of the things that I would think are ways that we can explore, like trying to solve some of these issues.
So one thing about being a mission-oriented, kind of like end goal, end game, you know, investor, right? You've obviously been thinking about this a lot. How hard is it to pitch the capital providers or the loan providers, you know, the liquidity providers on these things? Because they are relatively, I don't want to call them high risk, but some of the stuff you're doing is new and innovative, right? I mean, realistically, there's not a lot of people doing it maybe in Nashville. And so you are walking in the door saying, hey, here's my business plan. This is what I think we should do. And they're like, how much resistance do you get to the fact that it's transitional housing versus just it's any other type of real estate? I mean, is there a specialist people that you're dealing with at the different institutions that are better to deal with in that regard? People that like that better, do they have like a division of that that's maybe easier?
Yeah. So there's all different types of capital out there. The types of people that I usually end up dealing with are people in the ESG departments and people who care about, you know, the mission element of it, right? Some of the Ford Foundation, for example, like they are okay taking less than below market returns, right? So if a market return is 15 to 20% IRR, if I come to them with like an 8 to 10% IRR, they'll entertain it. That they're okay with that, right? Because the clientele that they're serving, they want to see mission, right? They want to see impact. And so they're okay with taking below market returns. So those are the types of people that I have conversations with. Sometimes you're on a call, you're in a meeting with somebody who like has like a heart to like do something good with their money, but they're not connected with the opportunity. They don't understand the problem or they don't know where to start. And so those conversations are more around just education around, hey, this is not philanthropy, right? This type of an investment will make a return on your money. You just gotta be a little bit more creative. Like it doesn't always come down to just, you know, debt and equity. Mm-hmm. No, like, we need to be able to get new market tax credits, low income housing tax credits. You know, let's use the Opportunity Zone Fund. Let's use some CDFI funding for cheap debt. Like, there's all different parts of the capital stack that a more impactful deal might have to go after, because there usually ends up being a gap where mm-hmm. you got to fill, right? So it's like, that's kind of like where you got to get creative and looking into different funding instruments. And so, Steve, we were talking like around like tokenizing real estate. And that's something that I was very interested in because it allowed the community, it's almost like a crowdfunding concept, right? Like, it allowed the community to get involved and have fractional ownership of a illiquid asset. That's something that I want to learn more about. And I think that's where it's going. You guys are the experts on that type of stuff, but like, you know, there are a lot of different ways you can get creative with it.
Well, the hard thing is you want people to come up, right? You want people that have the opportunity that maybe just need a little bit more education, just need a little bit more opportunity they want to work themselves up the food chain, right? And so there's that, like you said, there's that narrative there where these piles of capital that are maybe a little bit more creative want access to that, right? And then you have the people that you're actually helping, the people that are actually going to be living there. I think it's an awesome story. I think the one thing that I was talking about locally here, I'm in Fresno, and we have some areas like that where there's some dilapidated buildings and stuff, some warehouse type stuff that you could basically transition into condos or whatever. Is it would be really cool if the people that live there, if they pay rent for a certain amount of years and they're on time and everything, eventually they could figure out a way. You could figure out a way to buy it. You sell it to them, right? So that they could own it.
Yeah.
And then that becomes an instrument where then they're lifted up, because if they have a family or whatever, now they have an actual asset that they can keep in the family. Or if they want to move out, then they can rent it. And then now they have passive income, you know? So it becomes this whole virtuous cycle there where by taking a risk on a process, you've actually created another class step, you know, where people can move up and they can actually lift themselves up by making sound financial decisions. You know, you can even have like a coaching program or something like that. I just think that's awesome. I think that's super cool, because I feel like so many athletes, they sit down after they're done and they're like, you know what I want to do is I want to play golf. I want to go on vacations. I want to do this. And they literally don't do anything. They literally just chill and they get fat and they just sit around. And I think the guys that are maybe have that long-term bias, you know, they know at some point their body's going to fail or they don't want their body to fail. They want to get out before their body fails. And then they want to do something, you know, to just keep going, keep that momentum up. And we get that activity bias that we're like, oh, I have to be busy. I have to do something. And you found something that's very good, because it's like linear. And if you stay on that path, that heading, you're going to march a really long way, you know, towards, and how many people are you going to help along the way? Right. I think that's a really cool story, the way I look at it.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
I still play golf now every once in a while.
That's allowed. You're allowed to have hobbies. Trust me. I'm all for hobbies.
Yeah.
Well, and speaking of good health, I mean, one of the things that, you know, that we really connected over was the health aspect. And it was an area that I didn't think that we'd connect over, because you have an entirely plant-based diet and I'm almost carnivore. And we jokingly said, you know, you're going to eat my vegetables and I'm going to eat my meat and we're all going to get along. But tell us a little bit about, you know, what you and Charity are doing with plant-based foods and with the vegan diet.
Yeah, definitely. You know, a side note, it's funny because we were talking, I think the first time me and Steve met, we were, where was that, Sonoma?
Yeah.
And I was watching, you know, the whole spread. It was a lot of meat, seafood, and I'm like over here eating bread. And I'm just like, man, like, you know, where are the vegan options? But I really took my health and my body and my approach to remaining healthy while I was playing very seriously. They used to call me Dr. Morgan, you know, not in an endowing way, like from the coaches. They were just, because I was always the guy telling guys to go get second opinions and like, hey, don't listen to that guy. He's an athletic trainer. He tapes ankles for a living. Like, go get another opinion. And so, like, you know, for me, I got hurt early on in my career. I tore my ACL my rookie year, fourth game, and that put me out in a lot of ways. So I had to sit down for a year. Lot of mental issues I had to go through, because, you know, the identity of being an athlete and not being on the field, it was a lot of stuff that kind of I had to go through. But coming out of that, I really took my health very seriously. I married my wife about 8 years ago, and at the time, my wife's a chef, right? And so she was kind of helping me like transform my mindset on health and what I eat, homeopathics and alternative medicine, all these things, right? And so I was open all the way to, you know, alternative ways outside of like traditional medicine and traditional healthcare and diet. And so about 2017, you know, we always had to come like in the off season, you know, you get your 3 or 4 months, you come back, you got a report, you have a reporting weight, right? And so I don't know if you guys got fined in baseball, CJ, but in football, we would get fined, you know, every pound that we were overweight. And for some reason, I was just having a really good off season and I was like 10 pounds overweight. And so I had to find a way to shave off some pounds quickly. So I was consulting with this nutritionist out of LA, and she started doing like vegan snacks for me, because I was eating cereal at like 10 o'clock at night and, you know, eating full bags of chips. I was just killing it in a bad way. And so I started to like, she started to like kind of ask me questions like, hey, have you ever thought about going vegan? I was like, there's no way I can go vegan. I'm going to get pushed around in the field. I'm not going to have enough muscle mass. She's like, no, there's plenty of athletes who have kind of made this transition. I'm like, but what about high intensity athletes? You know, football, like we're very quick hitting, like we're using a lot of energy very quickly. And so she's like, look, just try it. So I went ahead and tried it. Came back underweight. But wasn't like shriveled up, right? I was still able to hold my own in the field and, you know, made the jump fully to being vegan. And then, my wife, she got on board. She started cooking vegan meals for me. That kind of evolved into her cooking vegan meals for like 15 of my teammates. And then that ended up with us being in the movie, The Game Changers, which was produced by James Cameron. Arnold Schwarzenegger, all these people. And, you know, really just started a career for my wife. Now she has a book coming out in January, Unbelievably Vegan. You could pre-order that on Amazon. But yeah, we just really kind of went down this vegan health lane and have really been advocates for the lifestyle.
That's funny you bring up Jim Cameron, because my vegan story is, I have a lot of vegan friends in Los Angeles. And when I was playing for the Angels, I had a chef. Actually, my last year at Texas, I hired a chef because I wanted to eat well. I'd always done like meal prep services and stuff like that, because I felt like nutrition is a very important thing. I have a very similar story. When I was about 22, I had Tommy John surgery, missed 18 months, and similar to the ACL for football. It's just one of those ubiquitous types of injuries. And I got super dialed in with nutrition at that point. It was always very serious throughout my career. So at the end of every season, I would go on like a 2 or 3 week vegan fast where I would only eat vegan food to try to kind of get out the bad weight and whatever that you accumulate, you know, the kind of the lumpiness, I guess, you get through, you know, the 180 days of the baseball season. And so anyway, so 2012, I hire my buddy Aaron Elliott as a chef, and I gave him a menu. I said that you need to learn how to cook this stuff. Here's $5,000. Practice on your friends. I'll see you when I get back from spring training. And so I gave him enough money to like go buy the ingredients and stuff and like experiment on our buddies. So then he moved in with me and was cooking for me. And I had a career year in 2011 as a result of him, you know, being there. 2012, I'm with the Angels. He's living with me, cooking for me and stuff like that. Eventually, I decided to move out of Los Angeles back to Orange County to be closer to the team and, you know, closer to the beach and stuff. And so he didn't want to move down. So I like basically, I didn't cut him loose, but I switched him to part-time. And he picked up Katy Perry as a client, Jared Leto as a client, and eventually James Cameron. And so then he became James Cameron's family chef for a while. And he would go to like New Zealand with them and like all this stuff. But James Cameron has like he has his own farm. He has like a 100-plus acre farm. And so they would drop off bags of like a trash bag full of kale and like a trash bag of radishes and the trash bag of like carrots or potatoes or something. And he'd be like, all right, just cook this, use these ingredients. He had like a handler that would bring the food down from Santa Barbara to LA. It was really funny. I think the parallels here, what I'm hearing is it's the long game mindset, right? Health is a lifetime commitment. And if you're really committed to it, then you can have a higher quality of life. Nutrition, investing, a lot of that stuff is having that horizon way down. So you can, because you know, right, based on the fact that you got injured at a young age, like I did early in your career, they're like, you don't want to get injured again. And if you do, you want to recover fast, right? You understand, you figure out how the body works and all that stuff. So I think it's really cool to know that there's other athletes out there that are serious about that stuff and that they keep that going post-career, because it really is, we're all going to live for longer than we played, hopefully, right? So, but when you're going uphill and you're explaining this new thing that you're doing, this new thing you're involved in, right? Like, so you're transitioning to being vegan, right? You're transitioning into doing these investments. A lot of people are like, oh, I'm just going to let my money manager handle my money. Guys are just like, I'm just going to eat barbecue after the game. And you're coming in completely different, right? Like a completely, you know, like yin and yang thing, like totally opposite of what a lot of these other teammates are doing. Has that driven you to stay sort of like rebellious, I guess, in a way, to like make your own path, right? I mean, obviously the movie's called Game Changers. Like, is that something that you've always felt like that's worthy of the effort required or the resistance required to break through that?
Yeah, I'm a critical thinker, man. I ask a lot of questions. I did this personality test that said I have a confident individualism. I don't know how, I thought that was pretty accurate, description of myself. And for me, I'm always like, I don't take much at face value. And so for me, it's like, even when I was a rookie, it's like my teammate, he dislocated his ankle, running back, Stephon Johnson, he played at USC, great talent. And him and I were doing the same rehab program. And I'm like, this don't feel right. He did an ankle, I did a knee. Why are we doing the same exercises? So like, even from an early age, like I was always challenging. I mean, I had some run-ins. Like, I guess I had a slight problem with authority. If I feel like they're doing something that doesn't make sense, I think that's kind of why towards the end of my career, I was like, yeah, I'm done. Like, I can't kind of come in every day and look on a board and see my schedule. I need to be able to plan out my day, make decisions for myself. But like, I've always challenged, you know, the status quo, man, in many respects. And so for me, it's like, I do my own research. I think critically, you know, I rarely watch the news because that's a whole nother circus. But like, you know, when things are like, when I want to discover something, I discover it for it's like, you know, from my perspective and my understanding without kind of having like being, it's hard not to be influenced in today's day and age because there's so much input and there's so many things that are being programmed into your mind. So you kind of like lose the ability to like interpret and like process things from your own perspective as opposed to somebody else's perspective. So for me, I try to keep that refined, you know, whether it's through meditation, whether it's through social media, you know, detoxes, and just I try to stay true to who I am and true to like my values and who I am, so I can like see things for what they really are, because it's just hard in today's day and age. But I think it helps me. I think it helps me like arrive at my convictions more clearly, and it helps me to kind of play that long game so that when the adversity does hit, and it always does, it's just a matter of when, you kind of can hold true to like your convictions and what you believe in, right? And so like you're not just a double-minded person who can kind of be kind of swayed, right? You're very like, you hold true to who you are. So that's how I live my life, man.
Yeah, Steven, sounds like a Bitcoin hodler. I love it. Great.
Yeah, he's a total Bitcoin hodler, man. He's been at Morgan Field for a while. I mean, yeah. I think that's what we all have in common here, right? You know, we're all very independent in our thinking. We're all critical thinkers. I think we're all libertarians. We all hold Bitcoin. You know, we're anti-status quo. I mean, it's funny because everything you just said is exactly how I feel about a lot of things, right? You know, there's so much happening right now in society on both sides that sound absolutely crazy, right?
Crazy.
You know, monetary regime. You know, we're starting to see a challenge to it. And we're seeing some pushback, you know, today. You know, this probably won't be released until a few more days from now. But today was the day that El Salvador decided that they were going to adopt Bitcoin as their own currency. And they were relying on the U.S. dollar. And they said, we're not going to rely on that anymore. You know, that the U.S. dollar has an unlimited amount of supply. It's going to be.
It's this. Exactly. It's all it is.
It's paper. Yeah. It's paper, you know, and people should get to choose which money they want to use, right? Bottom line, right? If you want to use gold, use gold. If you want to use fiat currency, use fiat. If you want to use Bitcoin, use Bitcoin. People should get to decide right. And let the best one win. So
100%.
So long term, then, I guess. Do you have a way mentally of like integrating Bitcoin into your investment philosophy as sort of a balance for the real estate stuff and the other hard assets that you're investing in?
I don't have a true strategy. I think it was more of a FOMO. You know, back in 2017, I was like, "Yo, what's this?" And you know, I'm probably like five documentaries in, and I read up on it a lot. But you know, I look at it almost as like a hedge. Mm-hmm. That's how I'm looking at it. And so like there's a small percentage of my overall net worth that I have in Bitcoin. And it's almost like I have gold and silver, like I own physical gold and silver. And so I look at it in a similar fashion, but there's so many variations of like, you know, cryptocurrency, but in particular Bitcoin, like, yeah, I'm a believer in it. I don't think I have enough money to get invested in Steve's fund, but I do want to start, you know, getting more in depth in and understanding it more and having a strategy for it other than just, you know, buying it out of like a fear of missing out. Now, I did kind of get a little bit more disciplined, like buying the dips. So for me, it was like when it hit like 29 a couple of weeks ago, like I'm buying, you know? And so like for me, you know, it was like kind of, I was doing the opposite at first. I was like buying when it got high and not doing anything when it dipped. And so now I'm the opposite, right? So I'm buying when it's low and, you know, low, and trying to like hold on to it when it starts accumulating.
Yeah. I think just like anybody else, like or any other type of investing, Bitcoin is really time intensive to learn. You have to spend a certain amount of time reading up and watching things, listening to podcasts, stuff like that. But then eventually you kind of come to the conclusion, at least I've come to the conclusion, that I'm investing in the future version of me every time I put money in there. And for me, it's been sort of like capital reallocation, not necessarily, you know, to the point where I didn't know what to do with my money. I was doing something with some of my money and I decided to do this with it instead. So it was like replacing, you know, this type of an investment with that type of an investment. And now it's almost like a part of my budget. I look at my monthly, you know, salary or whatever, and I'm like, okay, well, this much is going to Bitcoin before I do anything else with anything else. So it's like that allows me to then be somewhat creative with the dip buying and stuff like that. And also getting more strategic with like the strategies and stuff. I started as a trader because I was like day trading and I was like, oh, this is awesome. At 2 a.m. when I'm not sleeping, I could be trading and there's a market. But now it's definitely more of a long-term vision because of the principles of the whole thing. And I think that's what's what drives me now is you know, the principles of the Bitcoin network and what it means for freedom and personal choice. Like, cause like you said, you know, do whatever you want. But that's the mentality for me is investing in the future me. Right. And I think you're doing that same thing because you're investing in the community, right? You're investing in their future. You're giving them an opportunity to get a leg up. And you're also bringing other people into investments that they might not have exposure to typically, which means that you're actually creating like a habit in those companies or for those banks or whatever to maybe say, hey, we're doing this thing in Nashville. We've got a company that's doing this stuff. Maybe we could be doing this in Miami. Maybe we could be doing this in the Bay Area or Chicago or whatever. Because in most major cities, there are those opportunities of the sort of the open warehouses or whatever. And real estate's expensive, but those things might have fallen into disarray and are owned by the city or something. So I think that niche right there is so awesome because it's like you become a specialist in that. And then, hey, how do we get the grants? How do we get the entitlements? How do we get all this stuff? Because that's the last mile to actually landing these things. It's getting them close to the, you know, closing the gap at the very end is a super gnarly skill. And I think Stephen can probably, you know, expand on that and close us out.
Yeah. I mean, look, this all goes back to, you know, long-term thinking. And that's what we've been talking about this whole time, you know, all along, always have a plan, always have a set of values and everything that you do has to align with those values and has to, you know, focus on that long-term plan. And again, that's been Bitcoin for me, right? I mean, even back when I was a bond trader, I never even mentioned that little Bitcoin because people would make fun of me, right? You know, people just weren't even ready to have the conversation back then. But it did kind of turn into, you know, buying the dips, right? I mean, today was a great day to buy the dip. You know, you have an entire country adopting the currency, and there's a massive dip, and it's a great day to take advantage of that. So yeah, all the, you know, Bitcoin being a long-term opportunity, like you said, CJ, you know, the real estate, you know, long-term opportunity, as we talked about nutrition, you know, your health, you know, you're really gaining for the long-term. So now this is great. I really appreciate you having on, Derek. Any last thoughts before we shut off?
I appreciate you guys having me on. I'd love to learn a little bit more about strategy when it comes to Bitcoin and the long term. Like you said, I like that what you said, CJ, investing in your future self. And so would love to learn a little bit more offline from you guys. And so, but just thankful that you guys have me on and hoping to continue the conversation.
Yeah, we really appreciate having you here and taking time to be with us today. It's great.
Yeah, thank you.
That's another episode of the Bitcoin Bottom Line. You heard Derek Morgan, who his wife is coming out with a book, Unbelievably Vegan, and that's going to be available on Amazon. So listen to more and follow up and let us know in the comments on the Bitcoin Bottom Line, where you can find us on Twitter and on Instagram. Thanks for joining.